bunch of kids, and you could see it in their eyes. They were entirely black, no color, no whites, no nothing. Just these hollow, empty spaces that were full of the kind of nothing that wanted to suck you into it and watch you spin helplessly and scream. The kids walked around like well-behaved children from a boarding school, but I saw their eyes, suddenly fastening on to me, maybe a dozen sets of them. The eyes stared at me, and they had a horrible power. I suddenly remembered my last nightmare, not just the details of what happened, but the way it made me feel when I was having it, and my legs got weak. Dad was paying attention to Mouse and vice versa, and neither of them saw the way that the haunts all stared at me for a good second as they went by. I felt each gaze and knew what was happening. The haunts were marking me for prey. Oh, great. This was all I needed. I folded my arms against my stomach and took slow, deep breaths that were supposed to help me not spaz out as much. My dad couldn't see the haunts. He couldn't really interact with them, but they were able to hurt him, and he wouldn't even know what was happening. I was pretty sure that it was probably a terrible idea to go into the zoo with a bunch of hungry, hunting creeps. Haunts could be dangerous if you didn't know how to handle them, which was bad enough all by itself. I glanced up at him for a second. He was watching me with that concerned look adults get before they carry me off to a dark, quiet room. All I had to do was say something, and he'd do it. I'd be safe, and it would be quiet. And then that would be the end of our first real day together. Stupid haunts. Stupid creeping haunts. I wasn't going to let them and their stupid faces ruin this for my dad. I would deal with them myself. But first, I would see a bunch of super awesome animals. I mean, Mouse was cheating, which he does all the time. He's a foo dog, and he has a bunch of weird powers. Most of his powers generally relate to telling monsters to back off, and then they do it. But having him around makes everything a little easier. When Mouse is there, there's always a seat in the restaurant when you're hungry, and you get the good waiter. TV commercials always have the good movie trailers mixed in them. Cartoons show funnier episodes. If you go to a game, the people around you are always really nice. It doesn't work at school, because Mouse won't cheat there. But everywhere else, it just makes things happen a lot nicer than they otherwise would. Nobody seemed to notice it but me, but that was okay. Mouse was the only one to notice when I needed a big furry hug sometimes. Mouse was using his powers to make the zoo more awesome. The animals were all being super cool. The otters were running and playing, and the monkeys were swinging and making noises, and even the lion roared for us while we were there. If it hadn't been for the haunts, it would have been perfect. They were following me. I mean, they weren't being obvious about it or anything, but their group had split up into pairs, and there were always a couple of them within 30 or 40 yards, keeping track of me and staring. Always, always staring. That was what haunts did. They followed you, sometimes for days and days, and they stared, and their empty eyes made you relive the bad things from your life. If they did it long enough, you'd just wind up in a ball on the ground, and when you got up, you'd have big black eyes, and the haunt would be telling you what to do from then on. I thought about telling my dad about them, but he may have been nice and a wizard, but he was also a grown-up. If you started talking to grown-ups about things they couldn't see, let's just say that you didn't get to go chase fireflies near dark very often. Besides, what if he thought I was, you know, broken? What if he didn't want a daughter who was all funny in the head? So I kept quiet and close to Mouse. The haunts didn't dare get very close as long as he was there. Mouse could sort of see the creeps, if they got close enough, and weren't careful to be super quiet and low-key. Even though he's an adult, he's a grown-up dog, and that makes him a lot like a kid. So far, they kept their distance to avoid his notice, and as long as they stayed that far back, their scare-bear stare couldn't do much more than make me grumpy, and the awesome factor in the zoo was kind of countering that. Maybe today would go smoothly after all. And then my dad's head shot up like mouse when he smells lighter fluid at the carpenter's house. And his eyes flicked around him like a big hungry bear looking for something to tear into. Dad? I asked. He looked down at me, and he did not look like a dad. He looked like the hero of a revenge movie, tense and alert and maybe even a little angry. Oh. Oh, wow. There must have been a monster or something for him to look like that. I didn't see anything, but it seemed like a good idea to get between Mouse and my dad before asking, "Is there something bad?" He looked away from me, and the little muscles in his jaw jumped a bunch of times. I wasn't sure if maybe I'd made him angry. I didn't think so. I didn't think I'd done anything that he could get mad about. But I didn't always realize it when I did. "Maybe," he said finally. He looked at me, and his face got softer for a minute. "Maybe nothing. I don't know. I need to look around and see what's going on. I need to put you in a safe spot before I do that." Sometimes safe spots are nice and safe, and sometimes they were a room with a locked door. Did he think I was about to have an attack or something? Or maybe he was just being careful. Grown-ups are always being careful. But how could I be sure which it was? "It's important, isn't it?" I said. My dad couldn't have understood what I was asking. "Maybe," he said. He nodded toward the cafe that served the zoo. "How about we go get a booth and order some food? You and Mouse sit, and I'll go look around and be back before the food gets there." I needed a big furry hug, and Mouse was right there. I hugged him and thought, if he was going to stay here instead of taking me somewhere, then he probably didn't think he had to take care of me. So, you know, that's good, I thought. But it would leave me on my own, with creeps all over the place. Well, that was my problem. And I'd have Mouse with me. Mouse always helped. I looked up at my dad and nodded. "Yeah, I guess that's okay." "How about it, Mouse?" he asked. "Can you behave yourself around food?" Mouse was staring out across the park like he was trying to see something hidden from him. I'm sure he knew the creeps were around, though he left them alone if they left me alone. He made a noise in his chest that was part whine and part rumble. "Trouble, boy?" my dad asked. See, my dad is pretty smart. Most grown-ups try to tell you about how limited dogs are and how smart they aren't. Mouse has been going to school with me since I was little, and he reads better than I do. If he thought there might be trouble, only a dummy would ignore him, and my dad wasn't a dummy. Mouse stayed staring for a minute, then exhaled slowly and looked up at my dad. His ears perked up and he wagged his tail. My dad took that to mean that all was well. "All right," he said, and wagged his finger at Mouse. "Be good." "Woof," Mouse said. "He's always good," I said, and kissed his ear. "We're gonna have to handle these haunts while he's gone, Mouse," I whispered. "Real smooth, okay? He worries enough." Mouse made a sound that I could feel in his neck but couldn't hear. I hugged him tighter and then let go. "Okay," my dad said. He got us seats in the restaurant, which were miraculously open. "Good boy, Mouse." He bought me some French fries and handed me a $20 bill. "To pay for the food if you need more." "Okay," I said. I was pretty hungry, and the fries smelled good.
"Don't leave until I come back for you, okay?"
I nodded, and he strode out. He should have had his coat. It would have been all swirly like Batman. Jeans and an old Battlestar Galactica t-shirt just didn't make the same impression. I'd eaten maybe 3 French fries when the chair across from me scraped on the floor and the haunt sat down across from me. It looked like a girl, maybe a year older and a lot bigger than me. She had blonde hair and a nice school uniform, and her eyes looked like outer space.
"No one likes you," the haunt said. "They make people be your partner at school."
Mouse growled, and the salt shaker on the table rattled a little. I tried to ignore what the haunt said. They all did this. They stared at you and read all your terrible memories like they were a cartoon strip. Then they talked to you about them. No one likes you, the haunt repeated. You're weird. You're different. I felt Mouse gathering himself, but I couldn't let him act. As far as everyone standing around us knew, it would look like an absolutely giant dog attacking a little girl when she hadn't done anything to provoke it. That would be bad. So I put my foot on his head and pushed down as hard as I could. It barely made him move, but I felt him relax. Mouse is a pretty good dog. You're losing your mind, the haunt said. No one wants to be your friend. No one wants to play with you. No one even wants to say your name. I put more salt on my fries. Quite a bit of it, actually. Some of it fell into my other hand. You should be alone. Then no one would have to put up with you, said the haunt. I looked up into its empty eyes and said, I know what you are. I'm going to give you this one chance to go away and bother someone else. After that, things will get ugly. Don't you think you should be somewhere safe? The haunt asked in a calm voice. Somewhere you can't hurt yourself when you have a... I interrupted it by throwing salt into its black, empty eyes. Creeps, in general, don't like salt. Don't ask me why. That's how it is. The haunt flinched back so hard that it fell out of the chair. It didn't make any sound, but the body it was occupying twitched and jerked randomly, the muscles all tight. I felt bad about that, a little. It wasn't this other girl's fault that the creeps got her. She probably didn't even know why she was doing and saying the things she was. You should wash your eyes out, I advised the haunt. Someplace else. The creep stood up, tears streaming down its expressionless face. It stared at me for a moment, eyes all red around the black, then hurried into the cafe's ladies' room. Mouse let out another growl and rose, pacing restlessly around my chair. Hey, I said, settle. It's okay. They're in the book. I know how to handle them. Mouse made an unhappy noise. He'd read the book, too. Molly had started it back before she'd become a grown-up and forgotten it all. And her little brothers and sisters had added to it. Harry Carpenter, who was kind of my big brother, had passed it on to me when the Underhide had come into the house. Mouse knew what I had to do as well as I did. He just didn't like it. Maybe they'll leave me alone now, I said. Come on, we need mustard. I got mustard, which is the best, for my fries. We started eating them, and Mouse settled down a little. He has a very practical attitude about worry. He doesn't when there is good food with people you love. My dad came back in a couple of minutes later, looking older. He didn't seem like he was angry anymore, just really, really tired. He tried to smile at me, but it wasn't a real smile. What was it? I asked him. Behind my dad, the door to the bathroom opened. The girl haunt came out, her face dripping with water she hadn't dried off. She gave me a dirty look, and the power of it brought up a smell, something from my darkest dreams. Kind of rotten and metallic, and I suddenly felt my stomach do swirly loops, even though I was standing still. Then the haunt walked out and just stood there, facing away from me. The others began to drift closer to her, in ones and twos, until they all stood silently together in a circle, facing one another. Nobody talked. Maybe haunts just think at each other or something. I ignored them and looked up at my dad, who looked thoughtful. A warlock, he said quietly after a moment. A young wizard whose power is not in control. Dangerous. Miss Molly had told me about warlocks. They were awful. Did you fight it? Him? My dad said. No. Why not? Because most of the time they never mean to do anything bad, he said. He didn't talk to me in a kid voice like some grown-ups did. They sound different when they talk to children. My dad sounded like he did when he talked to anyone else. They don't even understand what's happening to them. No one has warned them what will happen if they break the rules. That's not fair, I said. No, he answered, and he made the word sound sad. But that doesn't make them any less dangerous.
Can't you help?
Sometimes, he said very quietly. I'm not sure. I shared a French fry with Mouse, thinking. My dad always helped warlocks if he could. Miss Molly had been a warlock, and my dad had helped her. I figured he'd be running to help this one, but...
But I'm here, I said.
Yeah, he said. And you're more important to me. That made me feel warm all over, hearing him say that.
They just get powers?
He nodded. Born to it, yeah. Just like my dad and Miss Molly, and maybe me someday. Or that's what Miss Molly told me.
Am I going to get powers?
Maybe, he said. There's no way to know for sure. He sounded honest, like a teacher talking about George Washington. I tried to imagine him teaching a class, only maybe wearing like a teacher outfit. In my head, it was kind of easy to see him doing it, really. Weird, I said. I passed a fry to Mouse, who snapped it up and got the next one.
If I do, will you teach me stuff, so no one gets hurt?
If you want me to, he said.
Which wasn't the same thing as if he said he wanted to teach me. But he probably just meant that he wouldn't if I didn't want to learn. Like that would happen. Or maybe it could happen. That thought made my tummy flip and turn some more.
If something happens to you, who's going to teach me?
Nothing's going to happen to me, he said.
It could, I told him quietly.
Because it could. His work was dangerous.
And maybe there wouldn't be anyone.
Maybe I'd be a warlock.
He looked at me and took a deep breath. He was wondering about whether he should tell me the kid-safe version of the truth.
Maybe, he said finally.
That could be me. In the corner of my eye, I watched the circle of haunts regard one another, then turn as one to stare at me.
Ugh, it just felt icky.
This warlock boy needed help, and I needed to deal with the haunts before they hurt me again, or maybe hurt someone else, like my dad. That was the right thing, even though it would be really scary. It's what my dad would do, I think. I mean, we just met, really.
I can eat more French fries, I told him. Mouse will keep me company.
He blinked at me, as if surprised.
You sure?
He asked. It could, cut today kind of short. If someone needs your help, you help them, I said. Even when it's really hard. Miss Molly told me that about you.
Because what if Miss Molly had told me the kid's safe version of the truth about my dad?
What if he wasn't as good as she said he was?
What if he didn't want to take care of a daughter who had issues? Who was really hard to be around?
But he looked at me and then he smiled. And I suddenly felt warm inside, like I'd had all the hot French fries in the world.
Yeah, he said, winking at me and rapping a fist cheerfully on the table.
Yeah, that's right. My dad left, and I told Mouse, you know I have to do it like this. You can't come all the way. He made a soft, distressed sound and kissed my face with his big, sloppy tongue.
Yuck,
I said, and rubbed my face in his fur. I love you too, Mouse. He made a rumbling sound in his chest and sighed. He felt tense, his weight shifting, as though he was eager to go somewhere and do something. He wanted to help, but he couldn't. I got up from the table and walked out of the cafe and straight up to the waiting haunts. I addressed the girl directly. Hey, you, Space Face. The haunts all stared at me with their empty eyes. And for a second, it was like there were shadows writhing everywhere, people in pain. I ignored those images because otherwise I would have gotten really scared. Instead, I made eye contact with every haunt and then said, "You guys are the worst. Let's get this over with." And I turned and started walking, Mouse at my side. There was a confused moment of silence, and then the haunts started following me.
The book is pretty specific about haunts. They feed on fear. That's why they dig up all the scary things from your past. It's like they're mustard. They want you to marinate in fear, and then, when you're soaked and dripping in it, they move in and start eating you like some kind of gross bug. All the kids these haunts had taken, the invaders would eat them up from the inside, taking bites out of their minds, keeping them focused on fear. When they ate their fill, they would start looking for someone else to move into. The kid would wake up, like from a bad dream. But the book said that the kids the haunts had gotten wouldn't ever be right again. There were a dozen black-eyed kids walking along behind me. I wondered what it would be like to get chewed on by a dozen haunts at once. Probably really scary, like a nightmare you couldn't wake up from. Anyway, the book says that there's only one way to deal with fear, and only one way to deal with creatures who thrive on it. You face them. You go, alone, to the darkest and scariest place around, and you face them. It has to be alone, nothing but you and yourself facing the fear. It has to be scary, because you have to face the fear on its own ground. Otherwise, the haunts just follow you, endlessly, nibbling at you until you just collapse on the ground, making bibbly noises. Mouse walked along beside me, his head turned to face the haunts, the mane around his neck and shoulders bristling. He didn't growl, and his body language had changed to something grim and very serious. It's never really hard to find a scary place. They're everywhere. It's just the grown-ups don't pay much attention to them. I found one right there in the zoo, and I had to go through only two gates marked Employees Only to get there. By sheer coincidence, they'd been left unlocked. Good boy, Mouse. So it took me only a couple of minutes to walk down a utility staircase into the basement of a big cat exhibit, and from there to open the door to an old staircase made of stone and slick with water that went into the building's unlit sub-basement. At the top of the stairs, I turned to Mouse and said, "Don't be afraid. I got this." I was kind of lying. Maybe I didn't have it. Maybe the book was wrong. Maybe I'd have an attack. Maybe the haunts would just beat me up. There were enough of them. Mouse seemed to sense my uncertainty. His expression shifted, and he whirled to face the haunts following me, baring his teeth and letting out the kind of rumble you hear only from really old cars and maybe tractors. The haunts drew up short. Their leader, the girl with the tear-streaked face, faced him and sneered. "Guardian," she said, "you know the law. We are within our rights." Mouse growled lower and took slow steps forward until he stood before the haunt, almost eye to eye. His fur did that thing where light comes from it, silvery blue sparkles that glitter across the very tips of the hairs. If the haunt was impressed, it didn't show it. "I know the law, as should you." It pointed a finger past him, at me. "That is my prey. Stand aside." I really needed Mouse not to get involved. If he did, I couldn't break the haunt's empty-eyed pursuit. "It's okay, boy," I said. "I got this." Mouse looked at me, falling silent. Then he bowed his head down low to the ground for me. He prowled past the haunts, bumping a couple of them with his massive shoulders enough to make them stagger to the entrance we'd just come in and settle down with an attitude of patience. All the eyes turned toward me. I took a deep breath and got my phone out of my pocket. I had it powered down because I'd been hanging out with my dad, and wizards kill phones just by looking at them funny, if they've got any electricity actually moving through them. Powered down, the phone seemed to be okay. I turned it on, waited for the dumb little Apple screen to go away, and then flipped on the light. Then I walked down the stairs, into the black, and the haunts came with me. I got to a room at the bottom of the staircase,
It was a big open concrete space with a lot of dusty old machines. It smelled musty down there. It smelled awful. Shadows stretched everywhere, threatening. My light glittered off small eyes, close to the ground, outside of the actual area it lit. Rats, maybe. The light was shaking a little. I was afraid. That wasn't a good sign. If I was afraid, and they hadn't even started on me, maybe I'd break. Maybe I'd just fall down and cry. Maybe they'd get me. Maybe I'd walk back into the zoo with my eyes all black, and my dad wouldn't even be able to see it. I'd just start freaking out, and everyone would just think, you know, that I'd gotten worse, and they'd have to put me someplace safe. I shivered. And I turned around and faced the lead haunt. Tear Streaks stood like 6 inches behind me. As I watched, her mouth twitched into this bow of bared teeth that resembled a smile about as much as Sue the Dinosaur's teeth at the museum. Her eyes gaped black like a skull's sockets. The other haunts slowly walked around us until they stood all around me in a circle, close enough to reach out and touch me. Their eyes got darker, got absolutely huge, and then, I was standing in the kitchen of a house I recognized without remembering. TV was on. It was Sesame Street, but the language was Spanish, which I'd been brought up speaking. I still spoke it, though it took me time to make my brain understand it, like shifting gears on a bicycle. Elmo was talking about letters. I looked up and saw a very kind lady with dark hair, whose name I couldn't remember. I'd been very little when I'd lived with her. She was humming to herself and making cookies or something, and she paused to smile at me and tell me that I was a good girl. Her husband came in, speaking in a tense voice. She dropped her spoon and then hurriedly set her mixing bowl aside and picked me up. That was when the vampires came in. Shapes, not quite human, in black cloaks and coats and wrappings. They let out inhuman shrieks, bounding through the air, and I heard a gun go off just before the kind lady's husband screamed, and the air went all thick with the smell of metal, and the kind lady screamed and pressed me against her. "I know," I said out loud in a firm voice. "The Red Court came for me. They killed the foster family who was taking care of me. It was awful." The kitchen vanished abruptly, and I was standing, half bent over with my hands on my knees, breathing hard. The light from my phone showed me a lot of patent leather shoes. I looked up, angry, and said, "I didn't get hurt that day. Other people did. You'll have to do better than that." Tear Streak stared at me for a long moment and then said, "You're going to lose this family, too. You always lose them." I started breathing harder. All my thoughts started going so fast I couldn't steer them. Oh, no. Oh, no, no. I was having an attack. Tear Streak stepped closer to me, something eager in the way her body curled toward me a little. "Your father means well. But he's going to die. You've seen his scars. One day he'll get unlucky, or he'll be wrong, and he'll die. You'll be alone." My chest was clenching up. I couldn't breathe. I heard myself making those stupid little kid noises, and my eyes blurred over with tears. My heart felt like someone was hitting it with a hammer. Wham, wham, wham. "The Carpenters could die just like your first family. Horribly. Screaming because of you." "Stop," I tried to say. I just heard sounds like cluck, cluck, cluck. The haunt leaned closer. I felt other kids putting their hands on my shoulders, fingers rigid and just wrong. "Your mother died because of you," the haunt said in that same tone. "Your father is going to die because of you." I had fallen to my knees. Tear Streaks came with me. "You selfish little monster," she said. "All those good people dead because of you.
You should just throw yourself into a hole. It would be better for them.
In the dark and cold, when you're tired and scared and can't talk or breathe with creeps all around you, words like that sound true. And if that was true, then there was no reason not to agree with them. There was no reason not to just lie down and let the monsters have me. For a second I wanted it. I wanted to just lie down and stop. The words seemed right. They really did. They sounded true. They felt true. But feeling true isn't the same as being true. In fact, feelings don't have very much to do with the truth at all. Monsters had killed my foster family. That was true. My mother died on a mission to save me. That was true. But all those people were dead because monsters had come and killed them. And that was the only reason. Monsters, a lot worse than the ones who now surrounded me. Grown-up monsters. Monsters I had survived. I made myself breathe as the others started to talk. They all said horrible things to me. And then it hit me. The book was right. A dozen of these creatures, and they had dared to select the smallest kid with the scariest things in her past that they could find. They hadn't tried to jump my dad or even a vanilla grown-up. They hadn't tried to eat mouse. They'd come after the littlest, most vulnerable person around. Because they were afraid. And if they were afraid, then maybe that meant they couldn't be the scary ones. "You know what I think?" I said suddenly in a very clear voice. The haunts fell into a shocked silence as I looked up at tear streaks. Her black eyes stared at mine, her mouth open, frozen in the middle of a sentence. I narrowed my eyes at her. "I think maybe right now I'm the scary one." And then I turned off my phone so we were all in perfect darkness. And I threw back my head and laughed at them. I haven't ever felt a laugh like that. It wasn't exactly a bubbly laugh, but there was a ferocious, lion-like, sunlit joy beneath it. It wasn't an angry sound, but it told them I wasn't impressed with their black eyes and their bad dreams. I didn't try to be very loud, but the sound of it rang from the black stone walls, as true and clear as a bell. And the haunts screamed. Their screams didn't sound like pain, exactly. They were each on one note, an absolutely pure tone that didn't waver around. None of them were notes that went with the others. It was just this horrible mash of sound, like a steam whistle on the cartoons, but without any of the happy, harmonious overtones a steam whistle carried. It sounded like when Molly or Harry walked into the room while the TV was on, sort of a shrieking, monotonous feedback. And then, all at once, they went silent, and the only sound left was me giggling. I heard myself say, "Ah, stupid creeps." I turned my light back on. The kids were all lying on the floor, dazed. They were my age, more or less, and they started to sit up, one at a time. Their eyes weren't black anymore, they were just eyes. The haunts were gone. It was just us kids. "What happened?" asked a boy. "Ow," Tearstreak said and started sniffling. "My eyes." I said. I kept shining my light in everyone's eyes so that they wouldn't get a very good look at my face, and decided that it was probably simpler to go with a kid-safe version of events. "Gas leak. Come on, we should get out of here. It's very dangerous to stay." It took a little cajoling, but I got everyone back out of the building and into the daylight. They all seemed very confused. Mouse was waiting right where I'd left him, and he walked very carefully next to me, each movement slow and deliberate, so that he didn't knock over any of the confused kids.
One of the boys was smart enough to go straight to a security guard and ask for help, and Mouse and I went the other way. I found myself smiling. I might have skipped a little. Beating the monsters is kind of fun. I mean, it's awful when it's happening, but after it's over, it's better than video games. Maybe that's crazy to feel that way. Guess I get it from my dad. Mouse and I got back to the cafe, and I bought us victory fries. Mouse collapsed flat onto his tummy under the table in pure relief that I was all right, but that was okay. I leaned down a little extra to make sure he got his fries. My dad came back about 5 minutes later, walking with a kid a few years bigger than me. He smiled at me, and I smiled back at him. "Hey there, Pumpkin," my dad said. "This is Austin. He hasn't ever seen the gorillas here, either. How about we get some food for everyone, and then we'll go over there?" "Okay, Dad," I said. He blinked at that, and then he smiled so hard I thought he might break his face. "Woof," Mouse said, and wagged his tail.
"My name is Mouse, and I am a good dog. Everyone says so. There are many wonderful people in my life, but the most important ones are my friend Harry Dresden and his daughter, Maggie. I love them. I love being with them. And I love going to the zoo. I had never been to the zoo, but from what my friend said, I just knew I was going to love it. My friend and Maggie both smelled very nervous, though they were trying not to show it. My friend was worried he could not be a good father to a little girl, which was ridiculous. But if he wasn't worried about it, he wouldn't be the person he is. She was upset too, but for different reasons. She was worried that she would have an anxiety attack, and that then I would have to help her, and that the father would think she was weak and broken, and not want to be her father. That too was ridiculous, but her life has not been an easy one. They are both good people, and both often misunderstood by their fellow humans. You humans have the potential to be the most wonderful beings there are, if you can get past all these enormous, stupid spots you seem to have in your hearts. It is not your fault. You just don't know how to work your hearts right yet. That's why there are dogs. I think it's nice to know your purpose. We rode in my friend's car down to the zoo in the park. I used to get confused when we went to the park, but then I realized that humans had made many parks inside the city, not just one. I love parks, and they are one of the many reasons humans are good. I walked carefully next to Maggie, and she held on to my mane, or to the handle on my support dog vest. Maggie says my vest is red. I don't know what that means, but it is her favorite, and that makes me happy. I was careful to wag my tail a little and smile as I walked. Humans are little and can be frightened very easily, so it is very important to show them that you want to be friends. At least, until it is time to not be friends. My friend and Maggie walked together, talking. They were saying all kinds of words, but what they were really saying, over and over, was, "I hope you like me." That was silly, to think they would not love each other. But sometimes humans are slow to figure things out, because they are heart stupid. You are too. That's okay. Just get a dog. Dogs can teach you all kinds of things about your heart. I felt Maggie suddenly grow tense and pause to look at her, one paw in the air. Her expression was intent and serious, and I knew there was one of those creatures she called creeps nearby. Creeps were serious business, a threat to children. Adult humans could not seem to sense them at all. Even I could barely tell when one was nearby. I had to get close enough to jump on one to sense it properly, and even then I only saw shadows and smelled cold and hunger. It was not my place to fight them. I knew that from my nose, all the way in my tail, the same way I knew how to use the power that had been given me. It was my duty to defend and protect the home, and these creatures were meant to be a training ground for the young. Humans forgot them as they aged, but the lessons taught by facing such predators lasted for life. It was not my place to interfere in Maggie's learning. Unless they came in the house, of course. That was simply unreasonable.
Two humans speaking angrily to each other smelled like old tobacco and mildew, and the voices hurt my ears a little. They were discussing the role of the United States in combating poverty, illiteracy, and terror in Central Africa, and were quite upset about it. They must have been baggled. They were no threat to anything but pleasant conversation. But the group of a dozen school children who smelled like sick ferrets and had black shadows under their eyes were a different matter. They were being possessed by more creeps, haunts by the smell of it, and could be a severe threat to Maggie's well-being. Not physically. Physically, there were only more children. And if the creeps chose to take their battle to the physical arena, the same law that bound my power would allow me to intervene. The true threat they represented was intangible and serious. Maggie had not pointed them out to me. Perhaps she wished to ignore their presence on such an important day. That was a reasonable attitude. But sleek thief predators like haunts were often not reasonable. They marked her and began tracking her as we moved. That could be a problem. But something was wrong. I knew it in my tail. I focused my senses, trying to locate the threat that only my instincts insisted was near, but I could smell nothing. Human racket was drowning out the subtle sounds, as per usual in the city. There were scores of people walking through the park, and I could track no movement. But there shouldn't have been so many creeps here, walking about in plain daylight. I had been expending energy for 2 days to help make this day smoother for my friend and his little girl. The first day together was important, and I had worked hard to make sure no malicious energy would interfere with it. Perhaps simple ill fortune was at play, and things might otherwise have been much worse. Or perhaps there was a force working against me. My friend leaned down to ruffle my ears and tell me how much he loved me, and my heart surged happily at the gesture. Well, if something wanted to interfere with my friend and Maggie's happiness, it would have to get past me. That thought normally made me wag my tail. But today, it sent a slow, cold chill up my spine.
"Hey!" I said to the otters. We were seeing the otters. "Hi, guys!"
"Hi!"
burbled an otter.
"Hi, hi!"
said another.
"I'm tired,"
said a third, yawning. The humans around us didn't notice the conversation. Of course, humans think you need your mouth to talk. I wagged my tail at the otters so they would know I was friendly. "I'm Mouse, and this is the best little girl in the world. Could you guys please show off for her? She's never seen an otter before."
"Show off?"
asked the first otter.
"What's that?"
"Go play," I said.
"Play!"
shouted the first otter, and jumped on the third otter's head.
"Eep!"
the third otter shouted. The first otter bounded off, and the other otters followed, into the water, out again, around and around a tree trunk, and then back into the water.
"Look! Look!"
Maggie said, tugging on my friend's coat.
"Hey, look!"
The otters ran behind some rocks, but before Maggie could even ask, my friend had scooped her up and lifted her high so that she could follow the action. Maggie let out a rolling, bubbling giggle, fascinated, and the warmth between them sang of love and light. I wagged my tail so hard that I had trouble standing up. I spoke to the sun bear, who was sort of grumpy, but who didn't mind tearing a section of log apart to show Maggie how strong sun bears were. The lionesses only rolled their eyes when I tried to talk them into a pouncing demonstration, but the lion was pleased to roar. The monkeys were as happy to play as the otters, And I didn't even have to ask the peacocks to show off their pretty feathers. All in all, I did a good job, I thought. Good boy, Mouse. And then, magic, dark and ugly, rippled through the air. And under it was energy. My kind of energy, but dark and hard and terrible, full of cold, merciless clarity. I caught a scent, the far-off scent of something I could barely remember. It made me think of mountains and burning oil lamps and cold, bright sky. My friend had reacted to the black magic in the air. He was scanning the park, tense, the happy energy around him suddenly replaced with watchfulness and an unconsciously projected aura of confidence and power. My friend is not to be taken lightly. He is not heart-stupid at all when it comes to defending those weaker than he is. He sensed a threat, a dark practitioner, and he was ready to confront it. I heard a dark feeling roll through me and made the soft spot of my throat itch. A magical threat? Here today? My nose told me that the pack of haunt-ridden children was still trailing us, even if they were keeping a distance. What were the odds of a threat unique to each of my family appearing, especially when I'd been working energy to avoid this exact outcome? Something was out there. I felt the hairs on my spine try to rise, but my red support dog vest hid them. My friend knew he had to assess the threat he sensed, and that was proper. But he was worried to leave Maggie alone. He trusted me, but no safety measures could ever be thorough enough for him to feel completely sure she would be all right. He was right. Nothing is truly safe in this world. And that being the case, why worry about threats that have not yet appeared? Far wiser to make what preparations one could face trouble as it arose, and be happy in the meantime. That might be the saddest part of human heart stupidity. How much happiness you simply leave aside so that you have enough time to worry. I know sometimes I'm not very smart, but I don't see what's so interesting about worry. My friend spoke to me. He used many words, but what his heart said was, I don't want to leave her even for a single second, but I trust you to protect my daughter when I am fighting evil. I told him I would. He's learned enough to know how to hear me when I say that much. Then he took us to a place with food smells and got Maggie and me French fries to eat while he scouted out the threat. Is my friend awesome or what? He got Maggie settled and then strode out, moving with purpose. I had to resist the urge to follow him, because when he did that, it made me want to go with him and help. Instead, I sat by the French fries and watched them intently. You know, in case any villains were hiding inside and might be a threat to Maggie. We'd only gotten to eat a few when one of the haunts simply walked up to our table and began to say mean things to Maggie. No. When one of the haunts was pushed to our table to confront Maggie. This time, I sensed a change in the air. Someone was working energy against us. Outside, partially concealed in some greenery, was a hulking, furry shape that looked like my shadow. I could sense that dark clarity flowing from it in a torrent, strong enough to push the creep toward Maggie, urging the creature to attack. I felt myself begin to surge to my feet, a growl bubbling in my throat. But Maggie put her foot on my head and pushed down. Maggie was tiny, even for a human, even for one her age. She was a surprisingly tough-minded child, but she could not have stopped me from rising and running, even if she had been her father's size. My shadow faced me calmly, something arrogant and mocking in its stance, in the angle of its head,
It was crouched like a hunter, ready to leap. And it was trying to hurt my little girl. But I couldn't leave her side. What if it pushed the hunt to break the rules and physically attack her, and I wasn't close enough to intervene? So I didn't advance on the threat. I stopped using my breath to growl, and instead focused it into working energy, reaching out for light and softness to counter the black ice of my shadow's malice. The dark energy pushing the haunt rolled back from mine like fog before an oncoming car, and just then, Maggie threw a handful of salt into the haunt's face. The haunt recoiled from the salt, more than from the pain the body it possessed suddenly experienced, and I directed energy toward it, urging it to back away. If the haunt left Maggie, I could deal with my shadow directly and make it depart. I'd gotten its scent now, the smell of its hostile intent. I could follow it into, through, and out of every shadow realm to which it could possibly flee. The haunt retreated before Maggie's defiance and my breath, and I began to move, to eliminate the true threat before I could make another attempt on Maggie. But the scent was gone. I sniffed harder. That wasn't right. I knew it in my tail. But it was gone. Impossibly, simply, gone. Huh. What in all the wide universe could do that? My shadow, it would seem. When my friend came back, he was tense, troubled, and quiet. That made me uneasy. I have seen him face many terrible things, and they rarely troubled his heart like that. A human, then. Monsters were not nearly the threat to him that other human beings had proved to be. He was in pain. I would have gone to him, but my duty was to guard and protect Maggie, and she still was not safe. Not with the haunts and my shadow running around the zoo, as if it was their own personal hunting preserve, and not with her anxiety waiting to undo her if she didn't have me beside her. He was her father. His primary concern was to protect and nurture her, and I would help my friend with anything. So I stayed by Maggie's side. Also, she had French fries. They spoke together some more. He told Maggie about warlocks and the dangers they posed. Maggie felt sad for the warlock, which I knew my friend was feeling too. But Maggie feared more than that, that he would not want to be her father. And he was afraid that she wouldn't want to be his daughter if he always had work to do. I sat very still and breathed bright energy all around them. Their fears were foolish, but dangerous this early in their relationship. If only so many things had not come up at once, and today of all day. That made more sense. These encounters were not the result of chance, but malice. My shadow was attempting to disrupt the course of what should naturally be taking place, bonding between a father and his daughter. I lay quietly, staying focused on working energy. It would not do to dwell on violent thoughts during that process. But while I did what I could for my family, I also pressed my teeth together to be sure they were ready. They were. My friend set out to save the warlock, of course. He had no idea that the haunts even existed, much less that they were nearby. I would have preferred to go with him. Warlocks were dangerous propositions, and I could have sized up the person for him, helped him understand whether compassion or resolution was the most important virtue to hold while facing the warlock. I could have warned him, protected him. But only by leaving Maggie vulnerable to the circle of hungry haunts waiting outside the cafe. Maggie waited for my friend to stride out of sight before she stood up and turned to me. "You don't have to do it like this. You can't come all the way." I had read the book as much as she had. I knew the course it recommended to confront haunts, and its reasoning was eminently sound. Evil, left unconfronted, only grows stronger. But to do that, she would have to face them alone, entirely alone. I would not be able to defend her from the haunts and the terrible thoughts. She would have to face them, and while the proper course was always to confront evil, victory over it was never assured. This was her path. She had to walk it on her own. But she could be hurt, perhaps even destroyed. My perfect Maggie, the best little girl in the world, could be lost to those who loved her. I made a soft, distressed sound and kissed her face gently.
Yuck!
She said, but she meant something else. She rubbed her little face in my fur. I love you too, Mouse. My heart pounded hard as the simple, frail, devastating power of that love flowed into me. I tried once again to tell her that I loved her in human speech, and again only made some random sounds. I sighed. She knew. We walked out of the cafe together, and straight up to the waiting haunts. Maggie had already intuited which was the leader of their pack, and she faced the little girl with her back straight and her eyes bright.
Hey, you! Space face!
The haunts all stared at her with their empty eyes and felt a sudden surge of malicious power in the air, as they drew up horrible memories from her time among the vicious, violent, and satisfactorily dead Red Court of Vampires. There were memories within her that could kill her, memories she didn't even know she had. They came out only when she was sleeping. I saw her begin to struggle with the images, and then brush them aside in an act of will, startling in its intensity. She clenched her jaw and turned in a slow circle. She was a head shorter than every other haunt-taken child there, but she made full eye contact with each and every one of them before speaking in a clear, calm voice.
You guys are the worst. Let's get this over with.
We turned together and headed for the nearest place of darkness and fear, and the haunts followed us. On the way, my instincts warned me again. My shadow was near. Whatever this creature was, it was a master of remaining unscented and unseen. It would, I presumed, rely heavily on its abilities and be accustomed to being undetected by its prey. It had struck me as arrogant before, as poor a look as I had gotten. I decided to trust that instinct as well. So, instead of being on guard, I only walked beside Maggie, as if I were entirely unaware of the threat. Together, we walked into a building that smelled of stale, old predator scents, and inside found stairs that went down into darkness and fear sufficient to encourage the haunts to come out of their protective human shells and be destroyed. If she could, they would do everything in their power to tear her heart into pieces and leave her vulnerable on the ground, meat to be taken. At the top of the stairs, Maggie turned to me and said, "Don't be afraid. I got this." My Maggie is clever and quick and brave. But she was also lying. She didn't know if she could do it. But then, if she had been certain, it wouldn't be an appropriate challenge for her. Then I caught it again. The scent of black ice, the vibration of violent energy, rolling forward like mist around the haunts behind us. I could hear the dark whisper of thought behind that energy as well, enveloping the haunts like fog. Kill the child. I saw the haunts at the rear of the group, nearest to the source of dark energy, begin to clench their fists and reach into the pockets for objects with which to hurt and tear. Sudden rage filled me. My shadow was a creature of evil, the likes of which I had seldom faced. It was trying to get the haunts to violate natural law,
to physically attack a little girl. Certainly, if they did, I could intervene, but only by hurting innocent children who had committed no sin but to be unprepared to face spiritual threats they had likely never imagined. My deepest growl